The views expressed on this Turnbuckle Tabloid live stream or Turnbuckle Tabloid podcast episode do not reflect the views, thoughts, or opinions of the RageWorks brand, including the RageWorks podcast network, RageWorks content partners, advertisers, and affiliates. Viewer and listener discretion is advised.
Hello, everybody. It's me, Drew McIntyre, the Scottish psychopath. And I'm telling every one of you to get up, show me fight, and listen to Turnbuckle Tabloid before I claymore you in the face. Download, stream, and subscribe, and follow us on all social media outlets. Turnbuckle Tabloid, check it out.
Five, four, three, two, one, zero. All engine running. Liftoff.
What's going on, everybody? Tony G here, better known to the world as Josie's Boy, aka your girl's favorite artist. And today I'm here to tell you about my company, Painting in Blue. Painting in Blue is a creative house I established in 2017, and we specialize in handmade custom leather goods. We coined the term luxury minimalism because we believe even in your everyday life, no matter how much running around you have to do, you can still stand out and be fly. We create everything from luxury handbags to wallets and some of the best leathers you can find that you would love to carry on a day-to-day basis. So if you believe in looking fly while you handle your business while pushing fashion forward, make sure you guys go to paintinginblue.com. Don't forget to follow us on social media at underscore Painted in Blue on Instagram and on Facebook at Painted in Blue.
This is Daniel Garcia, and you're listening to Turnbuckle Tabloid.
I just want to give a quick synopsis of what occurred this past weekend on NXT Deadline. I've been slowly but surely picking up NXT after the transition has occurred, and the shows are getting better. I'm not going to say that I've been watching them consistently, but I have to say that from when I do watch NXT, they're actually more action driven, and the up and coming stars are more able to connect with the audience. I'm having a good time being able to enjoy what's going on with the product and the show. You can see some really solid changes that's gone there, and their pay-per-views haven't been bad at all lately. So it's been a good time to watch. So just quickly, let me go through it. For the pre-show match, we had Axiom versus Nathan Frazier, which was a really fun, quick and fast-paced match. Both these guys look solid, and Axiom got the win here. Axiom, I'm wondering if they're ever going to take the hood off of him, but as for now, it seems as though that it's doing the job for him, and both Axiom and Nathan Frazier on an upswing. Opening the show, we get Dominic Mysterio versus Dragon Lee for the North American title. Very good match. I'm going to be honest, when I hear the stories of Dragon Lee, that they're looking at him to be the next luchador coming out and being the big name, only mask-wise, I could see that. I do know, and not to take away from his skill, he's actually really, really good as a wrestler. But I think the big guy, luchador style, is Santos Escobar. But Dragon Lee, if you're going to have that Rey Mysterio-type feel, and, you know, maybe even better later on down the line, Dragon Lee is there, but I'm more of a fan of Santos Escobar. But nonetheless, not to take anything away from Dragon Lee, The one person who really shined in this match here was Dominic Mysterio. I think that he is such a student of the game now. You got to understand that not many wrestlers go to act. Not many of them attend acting classes. They don't have a drama coach and such. So many of that stuff is either taught to them in the locker rooms, inbred, legacy as he being the son of Rey Mysterio. But also you could tell that he does a lot of homework. He pays a lot of attention to old films and such. And he is, if he continues in the path that he's going to, I can see a lot of upswing for him. Just got to get a little bigger body wise. But other than that, he is a star. Dragon Lee gets the win here. He becomes a new North American champ, and that's going to be a good look. We're going to start seeing him swinging that belt around in different shows. That's what they look like they've been doing. Next up, we had the Ultimate Survivor Challenge for the NXT Women's Championship title opportunity at New Year's Eve. We had Tiffany Stratton, Lash Legend, Fallon Haley, and Kalani Jordan with Blair Davenport. Blair Davenport gets the win here. Fun match. They actually tightened up the screws on a lot of the loose joints of what the match was early on that they've had. And the women actually really showcased their stuff tonight. It was the crowd was in it. The false finishes didn't hurt here, but the legit finishes were key to this match. Blair gets the win here, and I have to say for the women's match, I had a good time watching. It was really good. We then get a singles match with Alexis King versus Carmelo Hayes. Is it me or Brian Pillman Jr. looks way different than what you remember him looking like? And I'm not even talking about the hair or just the facial hair or the braided and curls. Like, facially, he looks different to me. I don't know I guess it's done purposely because he's really trying to move away from the similarities of his dad. But in any way, like I mentioned before about learning how to emote and be able to connect with the audience without having, going to drama school and such like that. He's another one that's picked up how to work with the crowd, how to connect, how to make, the facial expressions in there. And he's a talent in the ring. The guy's solid. Him, Carmelo, had a really, really good match. Had a fun time watching that as well. And Carmelo gets the win here to push forward to continue the angle with Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams, which we'll talk about later on. I guess will be now. We get the Trick Williams versus Dominic Dijak, or just Dijak, Josh Briggs, Bron Breakker, and Tyler Bate for the Ultimate Survivor Challenge. Fun match as well. Bron Breakker is on his way to stardom. I know that people are assuming he's going to get the call up soon. I don't see it happening until after, after Mania. He'll probably debut on Raw or SmackDown, or he'll get drafted up that way. But, this is a really fun match. So Josh Briggs and Dijak with their spot, the moonsault and such. Dijak is, I would love them to do more stuff with him, man. I could see Dijak in a stable with like a Karrion Kross or something of that magnitude. Even if the Wyatts six may not happen, but if you wanted to continue Bray Wyatt's legacy and bringing that together, I could see like Joe Gacy, Dijak, Karrion Kross, like that kind of faction working together. I think it'll be really cool and real solid. But this match altogether, I thought Trick getting the win here makes a lot of sense. He's on a real upswing. The fans are behind him, and it's going to be a good look to see how they move forward with him getting the title, especially with the tensions with Carmelo Hayes. We get a Kara James versus Roxanne Perez in a steel cage match. Probably not the best match for me in a night. It was okay. I wasn't really sure why it was a steel cage match, but I guess it was okay for me. Not one of Roxanne Perez's best matches, but just to see her in the ring doing some stuff kind of makes it all make sense for them to do it, because you know they want to see how gritty she could be, and so far she's proven that she can. And lastly, Baron Corbin versus Ilya Dragunov for the NXT Championship. Once again, not really a good match for me. Better than what Corbin had to deal with when it came to, I believe, his previous big pay-per-view spot versus the wannabe Kurt Angle when he had Gabe Stevenson. And this time around, I thought Dragunov is a star. He's amazing. Corbin being a good dance partner was okay, but not one of the best NXT championship matches, but still in all, it was enough for the crowd to get into it. My thoughts on the show tonight, except for the possibility of the last two matches, I thought the whole show was pretty solid. I would have liked to see more towards the last two matches, but other than that, everything else up and down that card was fun, and I thought everybody was ready for the spotlight, and looks like they got some big stuff coming their way in the next couple of weeks with New Year's Evil happening, and next year we got to start getting ready because they're gonna make that move to network TV. So it's gonna be interesting how they put all that together. And shout out to CM Punk, who made an awkward visit to NXT, having some TV time with Shawn Michaels, but still fun nonetheless. The crowd popped, of course they would as well for that. But other than that, I'm gonna give you guys, before we continue on, got two samples of episodes Turnbuckle Tabloid visited this past week on another podcast. Number one would be the Ring Fanatics. Shout out to Joel and Nick for having us on there. Those guys were awesome. Thank you for your time. We got to do it again real soon. And another podcast with Turnbuckle Tabloid stepped into was, we were with the Chokeslam Report with our boy Henry. Henry was doing it up. I wanted to have some conversations about AEW's transition to New Japan and possibly other stuff in wrestling. So he had me on there as well. So shout out to the boy. Check those guys out. Check out Ring Fanatics on YouTube and other streaming outlets, as well as Chokeslam Report. Check them out on YouTube and other streaming outlets. So just a sample of that. And when we come back afterwards, we're going to have a conversation with Homework Mike and Robert Cornell. He returns. Good guy. Journalist, wrestling journalist Robert Cornell stops in, and we discuss his thoughts about the CM Punk return and what's happening with AEW and the possibility of TNA in the new year and much, much more. So, guys, don't go anywhere. Stick around. Much to talk about. Take you guys in a sec. And just give this a listen. It's actually pretty cool.
So I saw this post that was on Twitter not too long ago, and it asked who the fans think is the MVP of WWE. The lists that they put down was Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, Rhea Ripley, Cody Rhodes, Gunther, Dominic Mysterio, Jey Uso, and LA Knight. I want to start off with the guys at the tabloid, since you're our guests. It doesn't have to be those specifically. You guys, if there's any others, you can say any other. But who do you guys think was the MVP of 2023 in WWE?
Mike, you can go first. Go ahead, Mike.
I think those names are the most definitely deserving of the list. honestly, at this point, Roman Reigns would probably be at the bottom, considering for most of the year, he pretty much wasn't around. But I will say, angle-wise and storytelling, he's probably at the top, I will say. I mean, I completely forgot that the whole Royal Rumble angle was just this year alone. So, like you said, like Dominic Mysterio was on there as well.
Dom's definitely on that list.
Yeah. For someone that really hasn't done much, he's done a lot in the past year, I will say. I will give like honorable mentions like the Uso, like both the Usos. I know Jay's on there, but I'll say for Jimmy as well. Aside from the heel turn, that doesn't make any sense still. Like Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, I'll give credit to. And also like Solo Sikoa, I'll give credit like, a little nod to as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Solo's not a bad person put on that list either. Right. He had a good year.
Yeah. So a breakout year, I would say.
So for me, I would have put an MVP for him right now because of what they've been doing consistently year around all through the year, and he actually brought a lot of more eyes to the product in the past year or so. Also, his work has been great. His promos, his charisma that he's been able to resonate to the masses. But I wouldn't put him as MVP. I would probably put him as most improved, but yet it would have been a strong MVP candidate would have been Damian Priest.
Yes.
Definitely.
That's a good one. Yeah. Yeah.
After the match that he had in Puerto Rico and Backlash with Bad Bunny, it took him and skyrocketed him to another level, and it gave confidence to the management and the upper tier individuals in WWE to say, we could trust this dude to do what we need him to do, and he'll do it. It's also right. been able to, as we can see now, we see a lot of merchandise has been sold through him with the Backlash and the Judgment Day stuff, especially the ones that translate to our Boricuas out there. So he did a great job with that. But in all honesty, the number one person that's the MVP, we could go through Cody, we could go through Seth. These guys have always been consistent, and we always know them to be guys that's always going to be the top tier performers, wrestlers in the business. But I would give it to Jey Uso because it's been such a big transition from him to move away from being a part of a tag team and be able to show that he is an individual. And the biggest thing that they did was they were able to, we were all sitting there trying to speculate how are they going to break up the Usos. And I think they found the right line to do that, to give them their separation. And when that occurred, we saw how much of a star that Jay is. And I think for WWE, he's earned it this year as their MVP.
I think Jay has had more of an improvement over Jimmy because Jimmy, I know Joel and I talked about this, like I think last week where, you know, I think Jimmy, we're still finding his place in terms of being a solo superstar. Mm-hmm. He's behind in Roman still. He's just like, I think he's put in that Jay position from when Jay first became main event Jey Uso to where Jey Uso is still, we've already seen that solo run from him. So we already know what he could do prior to this breakup from the Usos. But in terms of MVP of 2023, I'm going to have to give this to Gunther because I think you can get the same reasonings that Jay said for Damian Priest. You know, every single match that Gunther has had, whether it was premium live event or on Raw, was much CTV. And he made that IC title more important than it was before then. One of the great IC titles reigns we've seen in quite some time now. So he put relevance on that title. Like I said, every single match of his was always musty, even on Raw, when he main evented with Gable, Bronson Reed, and others. I think it was, he definitely put his name, he could also be most improved as well, but I think he made it more memorable to watch. Joel, what about you?
I got to put up there Damian Priest. Damian Priest, like Jay said, has done so much this year, especially going back all the way to the Puerto Rico show, and what he's done since then has just been incredible. I hope with this big return that just happened with Punk, hopefully the Money in the Bank isn't just left in the back of people's mind and they don't do anything with it. Kind of nervous that's what's going to happen and he's going to just cash in and just fail. Hopefully that's not the case, especially with the work that he's put in. He deserves to have that Money in the Bank moment and succeed.
Yeah.
But, to me, I feel that these fans in the United States are not going to be, well, we got to wait 2 years for a story to blow up. You know what I'm saying? Do y'all agree with me on that or what? Because, everything now is, oh, we got to have it now.
But I've been saying that, in stateside, this fan base is story driven. They love drama.
Yeah.
That's what they like. They like drama. They like purpose for a fight. It's for everything. We see it in boxing. We see him in mixed martial arts. We always got to have that pose down, that weigh in, and somebody got to get into somebody's face, and then they start a fight, whatever the case may be. And they like to see compelling matchups. And it's different in Japan and such because they're very pick up and go with when it comes to everything, including wrestling. It's more like you're looking at I play video games and I have emulators. Yeah. And emulators are good consoles to have because you can just pick up the game and play what you want, and you pick up where you last left off and you go. With wrestling, it's kind of, especially with AEW, you've already given them what they wanted and told them that you were going to do this. And now just because the product isn't being catered to your audience anymore and they're pulling away, now you want to add something to that mix.
Yeah. To me, I feel like if they are going that route, right? Tony Khan cannot continue doing what he's doing right now. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he put the Continental Classic together. At first, when he announced it, I said to myself, another damn tournament, And I'm like, what are we going to get out of this? What's the end goal? You know what I'm saying? But then I saw that Eddie Kingston pulled the belts off for grab and whatnot. So I'm saying, okay, so now you're eliminating the Ring of Honor world title and the New Japan Strong and combining it to what? And then when I saw that they announced they're gonna put a title, and it's a triple crown title. Now again, I think I even told you this when we were at the event. A triple crown title, that means you're getting world titles put together. That's a triple crown title. So is this worth more than the AEW title? That's my thing, because in All Japan Pro Wrestling, the Triple Crown is the world title.
Right.
So, again, that's kind of confusing. Doesn't that confuse you in a way?
It does, but it's also, it has to be their partnership with New Japan to get this going along, because I find it that out of this tournament, one of the belts is not yours. They're not your belt. One of them, the New Japan belt, is not theirs. So there has to be like some kind of relationship with that, and which is why the triple crown thing must be put over. And once again, we got to think about it. You not myself so much, but I pick up when I go. But how many people really follow along from the stateside New Japan, or overseas wrestling and such? And how many people are able to, put that together? If AEW is going to take that kind of premise and idea and spin it to their way, nobody's going to really know what the real legitimacy of those titles mean. AEW just spin it the way that they want to. But I see where you're coming from, to where it does feel as though like that those titles are going to be more significant than their world title.
Now, my thing is, now if they're going to convert it to one title, we're adding another fucking title to the AEW scene when you already have the TNT title, which, Christian is doing fucking magic with that belt. That belt was
dead in the water.
That was dead in the water. An international title, again, I don't understand the international title, because if you have the AEW international title, why don't you fucking send fucking, who's the champion now, Orange Cassidy?
Mm-hmm.
To Mexico or to Japan or to the UK. The only guy that I know that had that belt and went across the pond to defend it was Pac.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Nobody else has done that. Yeah. So, I mean, and let me ask you, what do you think about the Continental Classic? Do you think those matches are great? I mean, I'm liking it so far.
Yeah, I'm like I said, I'm enjoying it. I enjoy the matchups. When you see like a Jay Lethal versus Jay White, and matches that on paper you would be like, oh, these would be considered like somewhat dream matches, whatever the case may be. But now it's set up in this format. It's a good look. That's why I said they should have done it a couple of years ago. It probably would have picked up steam and had more relevance to it. But to your point about the titles, you know, you're an old school dude like me. You remember like NWA and AWA. They had like 10 belts in their promotion.
They had meaning though. You right. already knew you know, what that title meant.
They had the six man tags. They had TV titles. They had intercontinental TV titles. They had junior heavyweight weightlifting. They had different fucking belts all the time. But but it's to what you said. There was meaning for it. And it looks as though like we're just throwing out belts, A, for merchandise, or just to say, hey, look. This is a champion here, you know. Right now, that continental belt, that inter promotional, whatever the fuck that shit is, that Orange Cassidy, the emotional belt,
emotional damage.
That shit is just, it's a paperweight. That's exactly what it is. It's a paperweight. Yeah.
It doesn't have any, like, they figured, oh, let's change the name from All Atlantic to, you know, international. And once I said international, that's why I remember the night that me and you were going back and forth on Facebook chat when you said, oh, that belt don't mean nothing. And I told you, oh, well, when Moxley gets it, he'll probably be able to defend it at, you know, in Japan, because Moxley goes back and forth to Japan, which it would have made more sense. No, right. But John, Moxley gets hurt. They give it back to, Orange Cassidy. And they haven't done shit with it. Like, he's beating guys bigger than him, which makes no sense to me.
Because you know that's Tony's boy. That's his guy. You know, and that's a, and plus he's, like I said, he's been, he's being groomed to be a booker or producer now. So, you know, He's got a bicycle. He's doing the same thing with the whole AEW thing now.
This is comedian Kyle Lewis, and you're listening to Turnbuckle Tabloid.
This is Jimmy Lloyd, and fuck Turnbuckle Tabloid.
That's awesome. Love it. That's even better than I expected. So everybody, I'm happy to say that after a week's vacation that I had from my job, a staycation basically, because I don't really go anywhere. I get more adventures on my video games than I would going anywhere else. But after that, I've also was having a tumultuous but yet enjoyful time going to indie shows recently. And I got to tell you, there was a whole abundance of wrestling that was going on. I mean, countless. it was like a full weekend for me. So I bring in our boy Robert Cornell, who comes in, and he's an indie fan aficionado. He's a young man who's been, and he's been on the show before. What's going on, guy? How's everything?
I'm doing great. Just happiest time of the year. It's the holiday season. Just winding things down. As you said, there's been a ton of shows going on around here, and they've been really, like that Friday on December 7th when we went to that HOG show, there was like three separate shows going on in the five boroughs. That's crazy to me.
Yeah, three separate shows, plus SmackDown was in Barclay, and to their credit, House of Glory was able to pull out a large audience, man. That was a packed house, man. That was a good look for them, man.
Yeah, for real. Especially compared, because last year they had their December show in Laboom, which is a noticeably smaller venue.
Right.
Yeah, so it wasn't as like it wasn't as intimate, but I honestly think it was a better viewing experience. Better card all around, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, I was at that LaBoom show, and I was just upset because the beverages were overly exaggerated. The prices was ridiculous there. But nonetheless, for this past show, I have to say that I wasn't a big fan of the first half of the show during the before the intermissions. To me, there was a lot of gimmicky stuff that was going on, a lot of run-ins or bumps, and you know, it's just, you know, seemed like it was a lot of thrown together stuff. But after the intermission was when it ramped up for me. I was a big fan of the Swerve and Mike Bailey match, which, by the way, Speedball Mike Bailey and I, we're cool now, even though he and I had a little tension some time back, but we're cool now. What was your thoughts on Swerve and Bailey?
So Swerve's on a roll. I feel like in the first half of it this year, he was kind of booked into oblivion, but then in the second half, he's really stepped up his game. His ring work is great. He has these very athletic maneuvers that you don't see often. It's the little things, the way he transitions. Everyone talks about his transitions. He's got a great look too. When you watch his old stuff from like the mid-2000s or the mid-2010s, he was scrawnier. He would have just been lost if he kept that look. He would have just been seen as Deadshot. But now he's a top guy. He looks like a top guy. He presents himself as a top guy.
Yeah, I remember watching him in early days of him visiting House of Glory. This is gonna say maybe 2012, 2013, around that time. And they were running shows in a boxing gym, and that's how far back I go back with this company. And from what he was then to what he became now is a testament to wrestlers and their commitment to their craft. You know, there's many times where wrestlers sit on their laurels and they won't sit there and take advantage of what's there for them. Or get out of that shell and break through. And I think Swerve has been one of those guys that was able to come out and break through. My brother's a big fan of his. He's in California, and he would often see him out there. Thought it was a great change for him as well.
Yeah, I mean, what part of Cali is your brother in? I was born in Cali.
Oh, okay. My brother's he was originally from Brooklyn. Maybe before he was five, they moved to Rancho. They was in Cucamonga.
And Young Bucks home.
Huh?
That's the Young Bucks
exactly,
backyard.
Yeah. And right now, I believe he's maybe like 10 minutes outside of Anaheim. So, because they're always going to Galaxy Games, and I'm always seeing him in Disneyland. So shout out to my big little brother D. I call him that because he's 10 years younger than me, but he's like way taller than me, fucking guy. But he's also, he and I have grown an affinity in connecting with wrestling, and I think that's been happening as well with us out here as well. You know, I meet you through mutual friends, but through wrestling. And we also have the same thought process about Charles Mason and what run he had with House of Glory. What was your thoughts on his match with La Sombra?
It was a long time coming. I've only known La Sombra since that Halloween show last year when the first match I saw was him versus Fatu. And Fatu is a beast. He's amazing, but he held his own. He looked good. He took some nasty slaps that match. He did a diving headbutt, which I'll disagree with, but he looks like he could be solid. And this belt, this victory for him could be the beginning of something good, just so long as they keep the booking solid and they put him against the right kind of opponents. Don't try to have him outflip Speedball or Montekia. Put him in with some beefy boys, big man slapping meat type shit.
Right. Yeah. We got our boy Whole Milk checking in as well. What's going on, Mike?
Hello.
Hey.
Yo, Rob, how you been?
Good. Chilling. You?
I'm hanging in there. This weather's trying to kill me.
Oh, for real, bro.
Yeah, this is you know, Mike made it sure. He's like, I was gonna come over, but yeah, no, I'm gonna make sure that I get better, because this is bad. This is gonna be bad. But
yeah, I'm trying not to miss any work, so.
Yeah, speedy recoveries for make sure that you don't miss any work. But I have to say, for the Mike, what was your thoughts about the well, you weren't at the show, but you've heard the stories and stuff that Mason finally dropped the title.
Oh, Charles Mason. Yes. I think finally, just one word, finally. But I mean, if he stays around House of Glory, the main goal for him would be the world title, like, realistically, right? If he sticks around, because I know he's around other places. I know he has a storyline in GCW, I think. I'm not sure what it is, but I mean, in House of Glory, the goal is for to build up somebody for a while to eventually get to the top spot. So I could see him going after Santana eventually. So,
right. And speaking of which, we get main event. Before that, let's talk about main event versus Grizzled Young Vets, which Mike, I know I was upset for you not to be there for that match, but Rob, what was your thoughts about that tag team match?
Really solid stuff. Main events are, I'm waiting for the day they get a big contract with, you know, the big three, and they could sell a lot. They could be stars if you book them as like these marketable, I hate to say it, marketable baby faces, because they have a good look and they wrestle well. But and then this was the first time I've seen GYV, really, aside from their feud with MSK. There's a huge bubble or a huge gap there, but like they could do really good stuff. I think they're working here in DPW. They got something going for them.
Mike, do you think the name is just like off-putting to people when you hear the name like Grizzled Young Vets?
I mean, if you're trying to introduce a new wrestling fan to this to the team, it's kind of, they're gonna give you that look like, wait, the Grizzled Young what? but I mean, let's give these guys credit. They were fucking miserable in NXT with the booking that they were given, the schism, the dyad, especially Zach Gibson, who on Twitter would constantly be regarded as like Kane's like illegitimate bastard child because he looked like it. I mean, the minute they shaved the man's beard, he looked so weird. And like now, like you see him and James J cut these promos saying like, oh, now they're free, they can do whatever the hell they want. I mean, it's happy to see these guys do what they want to do. Like Rob said, they're doing stuff from DPW. Eventually, they're gonna go back to Progress overseas, but I mean, I hope they stick around in the States a lot more often. I don't see AEW picking them up, because they would definitely not match, but definitely Impact. It should give them a look, I would think.
Yeah, I thought that them making their, like, I guess I wouldn't say their first appearance, because I believe they had a match prior to it, if not after their exit from NXT to House of Glory, was very well receptive by the audience. The fans knew who they were. They were into it. And like Rob mentioned, main event, like I said, this is a team that I've seen from day one, from the scratch, from when both these guys were singles, and then finally they were able to put it together, that it's marketable. They have something there. And they're talented, and they've been in the ring with the pros, with the legends of the game, and the guys who can not only work with them, but they work well with others. So I'm expecting big things for them as well. And shout out to them; they actually made the PWI's top 100 tag teams as well.
Mm-hmm. So, I never want to be that type. I don't want to be the type of veteran that goes, oh, you need to go on the juice, or you need to get bigger. But like Midas Black does need to get a little bigger in size. Jay Lyon is fine the way he looks, but I think he needs to be more defined. But like, at the in-ring stuff looks perfect on their end. And the best thing with them compared to other tag teams is they have a character and they have it mesh in their ring style.
And Midas has been, slowly but surely, he's been progressing body wise. It's slow. He's been getting there, right, little by little.
Yeah. He's been looking a bit cut since last year.
Yeah, the spot always is a major pop is when Midas holds the ring up and then Jay does a dive through it. And that always is a major pop during their matches.
Yeah, so that's definitely, and marketing wise, I've seen people who come just for them, and I think that's your real target to get when you're that charismatic. Rob, we had the main event. We had Santana squaring up against everybody's favorite heel nowadays, Matt Cardona, who was holding the HOG title, had it for some time. What was your thoughts going in when this match was put into good air?
I want to buy Santana as a singles guy. I want to, man, but I really miss that tag team.
Yeah.
I know you held that sign saying Ortiz is better. what's BXL came in with his little Samsung and Android phone and yeeted that shit across the crowd. poor man's. But aside from that, that match was all right. It did its job. Right. You had like Santana get the hometown hero welcome with like a 3-minute dance number by that artist. I don't know his name, the Puerto Rican artist.
I don't think anyone does. Like, no.
Yeah, I
don't mean to interrupt, but I just want to quickly, Rob, do you feel it's forced when El Segori pushes Mike Santana as a single star?
Yeah.
Like, it came out of nowhere. The dude came back like only 3 months ago.
Yeah, like he's fresh. The only reason that we care about him is because of the Twitter beef he had with his tag team partner and the fact that he was gone for a year. Aside from that, like, what is there to show for him? The man's jacked. He's probably on the juice. He's got two big, fat, stone-cold knee braces. So it's a look. I just hope that his body doesn't give out on him.
See, he took the advice of all the veterans of saying get bigger, and that's what he did.
There was a video that was sent to me that they had him in the ambulance after the match. I don't know if that's going to be something that plays along the line with him from here on out being an AEW and any other indie shows. But I pretty much knew that this was going to be his launching pad to his singles. This is going to be he's a House of Glory veteran. They have history, you know, they've known each other, you know, the BXLs and Amazing Res know, the Funky Monkeys for EYFBO for years. So I could see that this would be their, I guess, handout or their, putting them over for the rest of the indies run so that they can show that he is a legit indie star. I'm just not buying it, and I especially him as a baby face because, you know, I've heard stories and I've heard tales of him not being a really good guy in real life. So him being like a face kind of rubs me the wrong way. But you know, for the time that he took off, he put in the work. He was able to put the muscle mass on. You know, we'll see what 2024 brings to him.
Yeah, his indie run's been really weird. Because he came back, he was working with Jonathan Gresham's company or something, and that was having like that's had like 5 shows in like a year and a half so far.
Right.
Like he's really gonna have to work to prove himself. He's just not a good babyface. I think that you put it perfectly. He's not a believable babyface. He was a part of this. I think Chris Jericho called him and Ortiz a pair of lap dogs who will, you know, kill people or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, have him do more aggressive shit. Make him be a heel. He's a guy from uptown New York. He's not gonna be kissing babies, hugging fat girls,
right,
shaking hands with politicians. He's gonna be, you know, meeting you in the parking lot, sucker punching you, and running your pockets and taking your shoes.
But other than that, I was like I said, the rest of the House of Glory, and I was just, like I said, just happy that they had a good turnout with such entertainment going on in the city that day. There was a lot of shows running. They had a big turnout, and January 6th, there'll be the next show, and we'll see. They already announced Josh Alexander to be on that show, And
ABC versus the main event,
right? They're finally moving away from the religious themes. I told you guys this was the last. This was the last one. They have to start fresh. They had a whole biblical run for HOG in 2023. So we'll see the new titles coming along. Rob, what else did you catch this week? Well, this past week.
I was watching some Dynamite. I missed that MLW show, personal circumstance. I really wanted to see that Fatu versus Hammerstone rematch. I wanted to see Kojima. They had a pretty, I think their card this time around was better than their card in April.
Mm.
Let's just hope that it didn't take also they probably didn't have to worry about waiting 30 minutes to set up a crappy ass steel cage. That War Chamber match was stupid. Why are you going to have you're going to have a big match and only one chamber. It's going to be it's just a too small of a ring.
Yeah. Yeah.
For a match like that. You need two rings.
Yeah. I know people who went to the MLW show. They weren't too pleased with it. It looks like MLW is going to be struggling coming into 2024. There's a lot of issues going on. We're already hearing that Hammerstone is making his plea to be released contractual wise. There's a possibility that although he had signed a contract a year and a half ago, that Fatu is also looking to make ways of making asking for a release as well. So it sucks because I actually was really getting into MLW not too long ago, and to now hear that they're pretty much just playing a waiting game when it comes to their wrestlers. It's just a terrible for the company.
Yeah, for real, like. It's crazy. MLW is kind of like the Jason Voorhees of the wrestling industry. How many reboots has that company been through? Like, what, three or four?
Exactly.
You can't kill it. Court Bauer is going to find some money from his Cayman Islands account. And somehow weasel his way out of not getting sued or something. Because it's like, there's so much talent on that roster, and they're bound by these long-ass contracts. I mean, I get the philosophy behind it, because I think Eddie Kingston said it, don't be a mark for letters, sign a contract if it's looking good.
Right.
But these are some really long contracts. And I get, in the case of a guy like Fatu, the man's a father. He's got like six kids. He's got to provide for them.
Yeah.
And that his status as a ex-convict is probably affecting the perception of him signing into a company like WWE, where they've had issues with guys like MVP trying to go international and overseas. They would need a whole immigration lawyer or something they would need a statement from their attorneys to even let him leave the country.
Yeah, but that's the nature of the beast. And you got wrestlers who are getting felonies while they're in the business now. So I mean, this is the nature of the beast when it comes to the business. Mike,
it's a sad state of affairs for MLW. I mean, I unfortunately, it's another one of those companies that was plagued by the pandemic when a lot of their talent couldn't make it to their shows. They had to try out different people, and you mentioned like Hammerstone and Fatu, and then I mean even the Von Erichs, who they put all their stock into in the tag division, they're about to show up on Dynamite on Wednesday, and they haven't been wrestling in about a year and a half, so. It'd be interesting to see if AEW snatches them up, then it's another blow for MLW. Honestly, yeah,
their shot is on AEW is of course to promote the Iron Claw movie. That's definitely that's what it's going to be about. But also they need the AEW right now also needs something to get it back to its days of yore, because. Rob, what's your thoughts about the state of AEW these days?
They have the best in-ring product on TV right now, but holy shit, the booking has taken a turn for the worst this year. Oh my God, I can't even get started. It's not consistent. This waiting game we're playing with the devil right now, because we know it's going to be some mid-ass reveal. It's going to be, 5'1", 25 pounds, Jack Perry, and I'm not trying to body shame the cat, but he doesn't look like a main event player to be challenging for the world title, especially now that this guy is the longest reigning champion in company history. Like, the bidding war of 2024, it's not happening. It's not going to happen. He's staying with the company.
Mm-hmm. I believe the same thing. I said the same thing. Mike, your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, as I've been saying, the devil should be Jack Perry, but the way you put it, too, it's like, you once he like reveals himself and it's him, you just sit there and laugh. Like, a lot of people go sit there and laugh and be like, wait a minute, really? Like, we're supposed to buy this now? And in the back of my head, I'm kind of thinking, like, wait, like, should the devil just be MJF? Like, let it be him the whole time? Like, he's setting up everything? Like, because if he does it, because if they also reveal it to be him, everybody's going to look at the company and say, like, what are you doing? Like, there's no creativity. Like, you're not trying to go out the box. Like, because you can just, and then you go back to the MJF heel promos where he says, I tell you I'm the devil all the time. Are you too fucking stupid? And then we're going to be like, no, but you guys are just fucking lazy. You guys don't want to try anything different.
Rob, is there anybody else that you would think that'll probably be in that devil role?
I legitimately can't name another name that's signed with the company right now. I think there's people involved in that faction. I wouldn't be surprised if it was O'Reilly or Wardlow in one of those masks, because, you know, someone on Twitter posted his boot, Wardlow's boot, and said it's the same boot as the other guy.
Mm.
And also O'Reilly has allegedly been spotted backstage, and that guy's been gone for a millennium now.
Right.
You know, like, this whole faction setup, I wouldn't be surprised if it's going to be the worst faction since Retribution.
Wow.
I've seen people on Twitter like compare this to Retribution, but hypothetically, say they do this reveal at World's End and like they're about to go off the show and the person reveals himself to be fucking Dolph Ziggler. Then you get people's reaction saying, oh, another WWE guy, here we go. And then also there's going to be the reason of, wait, why is it him? Like, what would be the reason?
Yeah,
it doesn't make sense.
A lot of it isn't making sense, but I got it. Mike and I were on the Ring Fanatics podcast the other day, and shout out to Nick. He actually put out a good idea that it would probably work. And like I said, I'm mad that I didn't fucking think of it. Shit, he said that the devil could actually be Britt Baker.
I
think about it. Think about it. She's the devil, and it's helping to elevate Adam Cole. Adam Cole gets upset. MJF gets pissed off and he has to cut a promo. And I could hear him say it now. You have to choose between me being your best friend or your bitch. And that'll sign something, that'll set something off. I wouldn't be mad at that. I actually would think that'd actually be at least somewhat creative.
For the moment.
Yeah,
I mean for the promo.
Yeah, for the promo, definitely.
Because I mentioned that we're not going to lead up to MJF versus Britt Baker on TV. That's not going
to
happen.
No, it'll be a lead up to finally get a rematch with Cole and MJF where he finally has to drop the belt probably to him. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think what's going to happen is he's going to have to end up dropping the belt to Joe.
Yeah, and also with MJF too, is like this is the most they've used him, and they've been having him start like. He's supposed to be the top babyface, right? Meanwhile, he's starting everything with every other babyface, like with MJ Hangman on Wednesday. Like, oh, look at you, fucking cowboy. Like why is trying? Like, he's in too many fucking feuds. The feud should be him and Joe going to World's End for the world title. And then you have the devil thing in the background, and then you have Wardlow on the rise. It's like, this man has too many programs going on at the same time. Meanwhile, there's other people on the show that don't have a program.
Gone are the days of one single format and one single angle. Like, gone are those days. Is that what's making it confusing these days, Rob?
Yeah, for real. I think it's just the fact that you have to have everyone, and you're paying them for something, you have to have them on TV. There's just so many, I think the term I would use is so many wires are overcrossing each other.
Mm.
Everything has to be a reference to something. Like, everything has to be a reference or something, or somewhere else, or something this guy did with another company. It's not as self-contained anymore. I mean, in the age of the internet and people seeing these guys in other companies, you're going to bring something. It's bound to happen. References and nuances and story beats. But whatever happened to a more self-contained story, I think that's what something like Lucha Underground did for me, in that it was a very isolated environment. It felt like otherworldly.
Right. You know, it felt very Mortal Kombat kind of, like, you know, everything was just in that world where stories could cross over and connect, but it was also fun, and it was very fan friendly when it came to that. Are we missing that these days, Mike, when it comes to wrestling, that we're missing the true aspect of today's wrestling, where it's the stories?
Yeah, and I'll say with Lucha Underground too, where it came to the storytelling, there was one person driving all the story, and that was a general manager, Dario Cueto. Now, I'm not asking for Tony Khan to be on TV, because that's not the person we should be getting on TV, but there needs to be somebody on TV that guides where the story goes. Give us reasons why we're having certain matches on the show. Because, like, we get matches announced every week, and then you get the graphic of like all set matches on top of it, and there's no stories attached to any of it. Like, if somebody were to come out on TV or like do a general manager thing and just say, okay, so next Dynamite or Collision or even Rampage, we're going to have this match for this reason. This match is for this, this, or this. There's no driving force really on AEW on TV right now that's telling us why certain things are happening. Because the ranking systems have been abolished, so there's no reason for that to be implemented. People just get title matches for the sake of title matches.
Well, I'll go back to that for a second, but when it comes to about the general manager's aspect, because I want to just discuss that with you guys about what WWE has been doing now that Aldis and Adam Pearce is going to be given a prominent role there. But going back to the, the ranking systems in the template that they had early on when they first started the company, there's been discussions, and even we've seen it slowly but surely happening in AEW, where they're looking to replicate or mirror what's going on in New Japan, give it more of a sports line kind of feel. Rob, you think that'll be able to translate over with the fans here in the States?
I want to say yes. The work rate fan in me says I want it to happen. But will a good wrestler end up on 7-Eleven cups? Can you have a really good wrestler promote your breakfast cereal or do a guest spot on the TV show on the same network? In America, I think wrestling is more about character work above anything else. The WWE style is what really gave it that, you know, flavor. How many indies in this country have that character-centric focus? You haven't really seen much of a work rate style approach really done since, you know, the early 2000s, when, you know, the Japanese style was migrating over here, and you had companies like Ring of Honor dictate a faster pace without as much of a focus on character. So to answer your question, I don't think a work rate centric promotion could leave as much of a financial as many financial laurels.
Yeah, I agree. When it comes to us here as wrestling fans, we thrive on drama. We thrive on the interest of good versus evil. This is why I've mentioned before that, you know, there should be comic book writers in production when it comes to wrestling, because, you know, the good versus evil, the strong versus the weak, that kind of thought. And with us here in the States, this is why our social media is on such a high rate of audience, because we love to see drama, negative shit, bad things happening and good people fixing it and such. I think that it's, I met, like you mentioned with the Ring of Honor early days, it had a a time and place for it. It had its audience. Unfortunately, it wasn't able to open up more than what it could do because of its limitations and plus who was owning it. But it was right at that moment for fans who were wanting a different pace of wrestling that it was lightning in a bottle for that. Mike, with AEW's troubles, is the sports kind of feel to it? Because with me, I think the tournament is not, I don't think it's bad. I actually think it's actually good, for the product. I mentioned before that I said I wish it would have probably happened a couple of years earlier so it could have been an annual thing years ago. Do you think that it's showing some kind of life with that company?
I mean, I like the idea of the Continental Classic. Like you said, it could have been done a couple of years ago when the roster was, was talented, because the roster is talented as talented right now. But I think the idea with me is that the prize could have been so much simpler. Like, what's the need of a Triple Crown title? Like, what's the point of unifying the New Japan open weight belt that's not even yours? It's the Ring of Honor belt that's another company, technically, and then just making a third belt. Why not just make it the damn thing? If you're going to do the G1, do the G1. Or you're going to do the New Japan Cup. The prize is you get a world title shot whenever the hell you want. Not a contract type of thing, but you get a guaranteed world title shot. Because let's be real here. This has Swerve Strickland's name all over it. The man should be a world champion in 2024. The fact that this is for a Triple Crown belt, who gives a goddamn? You have an international title, you have a TNT title, you have the world title. Like, how many more titles do you need? The only person I see losing out of this is Eddie Kingston, and the story could be like, oh, he's already, he misspoke and said, oh, my belt's on the line every match I'm in, and then the fucker loses the first two matches he's in.
Right.
And then, like, you put yourself in a hole where you have to now retract and say, okay, I did literally mean my belt was on the line every match, but no. Like, you know, like, you see what I'm trying to say? Like, there's no need for a Triple Crown thing. Like, the tournament is easy and the prize is right there in front of you.
Rob, is he right that the it seems as though that this is their way of actually opening a door for Swerve to get his comeuppance, to get his just dues?
Hey, look, if it ain't the world title for Swerve, then I don't want to see it. What's this all for? A fake Triple Crown championship? A mimic? Just so you could have guys like Eddie Kingston live out their inner Mark fantasy of having three belts? Yeah. Like, it's not genuine. It's not natural. I'm not sure. I'm not as familiar with the original formation of the Triple Crown. I know it was like they had a few like attempted unification matches. Some of those led to draws. And eventually they were unified. But it meant something. What is it like? What's this going to mean for something like the Ring of Honor project? When was the last time the Ring of Honor world title was on Ring of Honor TV? When was the last time the New Japan Strong world title was on a strong card? You know, the three a year, I mean, they've been having recently, because it's like you haven't seen that brand in a while. Like, what was the last time show they had, like in Texas or something? Like, it's really just not practical, because you have to unify these belts and you have to defend them. And what are you going to do?
And the worst part is they have a Ring of Honor final battle show coming up, their big show of the year, and they have no world title match set. Possibly none at all, because Eddie Kingston's doing this.
Let me ask you guys this, and it just came to me now because of hearing, you know, seeing what the product's become and the lack of diversity when it comes to storylines and match booking and such like that. Have they tied their own hands by limiting themselves to certain finishes and such? For instance, you know, not having disqualifications, not having countouts, you know, have they pretty much put themselves in a hole by not being able to have creativeness, by just continuing to have the same kind of finish, same kind of booking day in, day out? What you think, Rob?
I think it makes up for a more sports-like appearance. But there's that lack of mystery. There's that lack of uncertainty as to what the matches will end in. Because it's either, what, pinfall, submission, time limit.
Right.
It's like, Americans aren't, I don't think Americans aren't as used to time limits as they are in Japan. It's kind of hard to get a time limit draw over. I mean, I think AEW's done a great job with it. Mm-hmm. You know, their probably best match in the company history, a singles match, I mean, was a time limit draw, Omega Danielson.
Right.
But you know, we'll see how it goes. Hopefully, it's done with the right approach, a proper approach. Because I don't follow the G1 that often, but every time I see someone like Evil doing some crazy ass fucking WWE type booking, Eddie Kingston cut a promo this year in the G1 saying, "I am here to wrestle. I am here to do. I'm here for my mother and my father. You know, I'm here to. I'm not a fan of that WWE style." Then two matches in, he's getting freaking distracted by Gato and low blow fuck finish. Like, it's the most WWE shit ever.
Right. Mike.
I mean, I see what you're getting at, because when AEW started, a lot of the stuff we were everything was being tossed in our faces, and we had to try to remember it all the time. When WWE, it's pinfall submission or disqualification. In AEW, you can do whatever the fuck you want in the main event as long as you get the pinfall or submission and then or the time limit goes out. Because if we go back to the beginning of this company's history, in a lot of like the title matches, people go through tables. I mean, go back to the John Moxley Brody Lee match, they went through the fucking stage and they still continued the match. Like, that wasn't a stoppage, they kept going. But I think with AEW, that their approach is compared to WWE, is that a winner must be decided no matter what, where for WWE, for so many years, we've been getting fuck finish after fuck finish after fuck finish, where AEW was saying, we're not going to give you that. But I think in more recent times, when you have people come over from WWE, they kind of want to do some of that stuff, but also give you the finish as well. So with AEW, it's a really mixed bag of people that know what they want to do and people that don't know what the hell to do.
Yeah, with WWE, and I'll ask you that. I see that now. We could agree that there has been a sharp turn when it's come to their creative. This past year, we've seen what can happen when the old man isn't behind the wheel anymore. But it they still have some hiccups. I do like the fact that we mentioned earlier that the general manager has more of a prominent role on the shows. I'm enjoying the fact that we were seeing them try to go out and sign the talents like they did with Randy and what they're going to do with Punk. But Rob, what do you think has been, although they have done much better this past year, what is still hanging for WWE these days?
It's hard for me to say. I mean, it's a personal preference. Get Logan Paul off the fucking U.S. title. I don't want to see Logan Paul. There's many scumbags in wrestling, but I'd rather have my scumbag be a proper wrestler and not some internet clout-seeking, you know, moron.
Just to WrestleMania, Rob, don't worry.
Yeah, yeah. I better go to LA Knight.
Just for a few months. Him, or it's going to be either LA Knight or Kevin Owens. It's either or.
What do you have? What's your thoughts, Mike? What's still a hiccup that's still happening in WWE?
I can see for the main TV shows where we see the two main people in the same main events over and over again. I think they're starting to shy away from that now. But I will say, as a positive, with the recent with Punk and Randy Orton coming back, that the GMs are now being used more often, and then you see bidding wars on TV where as a fan you really want to know, okay, where does Randy Orton want to sign? Where does CM Punk going to sign? And that's going to be the interesting thing on Monday for CM Punk with his storyline. Is he going to sign with Raw? Or is he going to sign with SmackDown? Hell, even NXT, but that's not going to happen. But I think a lot of the thing with WWE too is that they need to just put people over. If you want them to win, have them win. If you want to have them lose. Don't put them in situations where they get one person's going to get fucked over in the end because you booked them in a corner. That's been the main problem in the last year, and we've seen the major difference with Triple H and now with Vince and now Triple H.
Yeah, the one thing that I was really having a problem, but I think they're trying to fix that a little bit more, is give us more wrestling. That's just what I want. I just want to, you know, you got a 3-hour show. You should have enough time to have more wrestling in 3 hours. And I don't need to see so many promos for 10 minutes as such to for filler. You know, let's get talent out there to work. Let's get them going. Let's keep the crowd in their seat. I think slowly but surely they've been fixing that. They've been correcting that. I see with NXT, they've been able to make that an initiative as well, that they're putting out more wrestling. They have the talent that they're putting out for that as well. But I'm hoping that for the upcoming year that the promise is set, where they said we're going to get the fans what they want. You're not going to get instant gratifications, but the fans are going to get what they want. And they've been promising that, you know, for years, you know, but now that, you know, like I said, the old man is in the corner watching porn. he's not in the creative chair anymore. We could see that happen. Rob, the last time we spoke, we spoke about the possibility, will Punk come to WWE? And it's happened. What's your thoughts on it now? What do you see? How is this plus or minus for Punk and the company?
So I think his the new shirt he came out with sums it up perfectly. Hell froze over. I predicted that he wouldn't come to the company, so I'll take that egg on my face. I mean, but at the same time, I think that's more exciting. I'm happy that we live in a world where something like something so out of the possibility that we would have thought 5 years ago could never happen again has happened. I think that there's going to be a lot of cool stuff that could happen if they treat his booking right. Hopefully they don't screw him over like they did on that big run he had in, 2012?
Mm-hmm.
As long as both sides can come to an understanding and as long as they cooperate with each other, you could see some really great matches. If he stays healthy, that's the big caveat. Right.
Mike, we didn't get to speak about it, but Punk had a big promo this Friday night. Your thoughts?
The promo that he should have cut the night after Survivor Series.
Well, he wasn't going to be able to cut that promo because Triple H and Nick Khan weren't in the building, so they had to make sure that they kept him on a leash. Pritchard was in the building, so
and allegedly his time was cut. So
right,
whatever he wanted to get out, he wasn't able to get out.
Right,
so
you know, and that is understandable. I get that because listen. You know, you can't have him go half cocked without having the big man in the building. So I get that. But for Friday's promo, what was your thoughts?
I mean, it was really good. I mean, compared to the fucking I'm home. Like, no. We don't give a shit. We don't give a shit about that. What? Give us your mission statement. We know what it is. Just tell the people what it is. If what I said, I'm going to win the Rumble and my mission is to main event WrestleMania. That's what he wants. Now, I think it's funny, too, where always on the show we talk about, do WWE fans know of AEW? And people in that building did not understand the reference that Punk made to Jack Perry.
Oh, I got a pop. No, I did get a pop. So someone knew about it.
But it's not as big as a pop as an AEW crowd. Because if you're WWE, you're thinking, oh, Punk's referencing Kevin Owens because a couple weeks ago he punched two guys in the back and he punched Theory and Waller.
Nah,
they're not going to correlate. Oh, fucking, we're going to think of Jack Perry.
No, I think when he mentioned it, you still heard the oh because you know that was the buildup. If you play it again, you hear him make that message, so everybody they pulled back and they were like, oh, so they did get the subtlety of it, but.
But was it as big as it would be in the fucking AEW crowd? Where
if you would have said it in Chicago, it would have been something different. I could say that.
Because with an AEW crowd, if anybody makes a reference to the other side, it's oh shit, or the roof explodes, that type of thing. Where on Friday, also not for nothing, this was a tribute to the Troop show. So right. They did a lot of angle stuff on that type of show where usually it's just, oh, we'll just do a bunch of matches and just say thank you to the troops. Where
I think they've been trying to change it up a couple of years.
No, but I like the change they did for Friday where it was kind of like how AEW does their themed shows
Winter's Coming.
Winter's Coming, Fighter Fest, Fight for the Fallen type of thing. But I will I think overall Punk's promo was really good. Teased a lot of stuff. The Rollins, Cody, Roman. Just that I hope they don't deviate from the plans of Cody and Roman, and they do just Cody and Roman and then Punk and Rollins at WrestleMania. Because if you want to do Punk and Roman, that's a SummerSlam match right there for you.
Yeah, no, it's not. That's not needed right now. I think for wrestling fans, let's get them what they want. Let's get the Punk versus Rollins at Mania. Let's get you know, he doesn't need the belt. He just wants the main event and let a main event. You can main event without a belt. It's fine. We've seen it done.
And once WrestleMania is over, we know they're probably going to do another draft. And I think Jay, you can agree with me on this, but with the new TV rights deal with Raw, whatever channel they're going to go to, who's the star that they probably more than likely going to want? CM Punk and Roman Reigns. You put them two on the Monday Night Raw roster, and then on SmackDown USA, you keep Cody, Randy, those types of guys. And I think it'll be an interesting direction for the next year of booking.
Rob, do you think that WWE is in a soft reset mode? Still correcting the path that the old man had. Are they on a soft reset right now?
Yeah, I mean it's a change of the guard. You talk about the change in booking philosophy in the past couple of the past year or so. I think that, you know, after Roman loses the belt, ideally at Mania, you know, I'm praying. I'm clutching my rosary beads hard, hoping that happens. But, you know, that could provide the opportunity to just say, here's a clean slate. Let's move some people around on the roster and let's usher in a new chapter.
Yeah, I think right now, shaking the tree of Vince, and you know, hopefully dropping off all the rotten fruit down there and finding something healthy within that roster is something that I'm excited to see for 2024. The same could be said for the return of TNA, ladies and gentlemen. I think we probably teased it early on, but TNA it's coming back in January. They missed out on signing Punk. They missed out on signing of Ospreay. What do they need right now to help shake up that promotion? There's a tease that, well, not a tease, but there's an announcement that Okada will be at their Vegas show. What is it that TNA needs to do right now to help put that together, Rob?
They just need to find the right guy to build the company around. I don't think Josh Alexander is a guy you could really put on billboards or soda cups or something. But if they can, I'm not sure if that upcoming, that next TNA star is even available yet.
Hmm.
But maybe in the next year, if they could get a proper interpromotional signing, then they could really get something going. I mean, TNA is, no pun intended, hard to kill. I think that's the pay-per-view name.
Right.
They will outlast the heat death of the universe. They will outlast our ice age, the end of mankind. They will be around for a long time. They will be just fine. They'll just find the right guy to build the company around. And also steer away from the LOL TNA moments. You know, weird booking moments. The company's changed.
People being stabbed to death, you mean?
Yeah, people getting kidnapped. Ethan Page fucking dying on screen.
And fighting himself, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like an A24 movie, some type of study on inner conflict or whatever. Like, I just want to see two guys in a ring. I don't need to see this oddly edited nonsense.
Mike, two questions, twofold. Number one, are they missing the ball by not bringing back the six-sided ring? And two, will TNA actually get the intergender matches over for the masses?
I mean, to answer the first part, is it really necessary to bring the six-sided ring back? Not really, because let's be real here. You can wrestle in a fucking four-sided, six-sided, eight-sided ring, whatever the fucking size of the ring you could wrestle in. It's the product that matters. It's what you presented. You could wrestle on fucking wrestle on a ring mat like Nikolai Volkov and some random jobber in a fucking gym somewhere, and people just will watch that for fucking nothing. But the ring does not matter.
Shout out to VXS who did that one day.
The six different bam non-factor. But the other thing, intergender stuff. I mean, the closest stuff that TNA has done with that is like their Battle Royal they do for Bound for Glory, where like you see that the women and the men compete for like a title shot in their respective division. I mean, the only woman in TNA that really does the intergender stuff is Jordynne Grace, and like she has like the physique for it. So, I mean, I do see intergender stuff. Do I see it working? Probably not. I mean, with Tessa Blanchard, it didn't work. It's very hard to buy women versus the men on a big scale product, but what Rob was saying, like they have to shy away from the LOL TNA moment. Just show consistency or stability, and just eventually they will grab somebody from the indies that will be their face of the company. Josh Alexander is a great worker and a great wrestler, but he kind of fits in that Kurt Angle mode where you put him in there for the best matches, but he's not the face of the company.
Yeah, Rob. Rob, who is out there right now coming 2024 that could be available? I know he signed a contract for a few years. Christian Cage, who it would have been actually good to see him go back there. He could probably help to elevate that product a little bit, put some eyes on it. But indie-wise, who's out there that could probably be an upstart for that company?
Hammerstone. If he gets out of that MLW deal,
right?
He can be a guy that you can really do some work with. I know that Chris Bay and Hammer from the same school,
mm-hmm.
FSW in Las Vegas. So they have that connection at least. They have, and also like Kenny King just left the company. He was working there. I say that because I was working for them for a while.
Right.
But I feel like Hammerstone's their best bet. I just wanted to say, in reference to what Mike was talking about the ring, they don't need a six-sided ring. I think that it was harder to work in, apparently. It was an issue of like timing or whatever, throw people off.
Mm.
The reason it was so synonymous with the company is because it got toys on there in their Toys R Us section.
Right.
You know, it's a marketing thing. I think that the six-sided ring is an iconic part of the company, but if you want to attract outsiders to work for your company, you don't want to have them have to learn to work in a different space.
Have you ever played the video game? It was a bitch to throw somebody against the ropes.
Oh, for real. That game was that. Those controls, dude.
Every wrestler had the Scorpion Death Drop as a finisher. Everybody had the same finisher. And I will say, as far as like free agents, I mean, we got to look at the AEW roster, because a lot of them, because if they are disgruntled, they do decide to leave when the contract's up. A guy like Ricky Starks going to Impact Wrestling and being like their version of The Rock, like their top star, that could be somebody. I do like the Hammerstone pick. But then other guys like Jay Lethal, like Keith Lee, like Bandito, like, and Helico, a lot of these guys that AEW are not even using that are relegated to Ring of Honor can turn it all around going to Impact Wrestling. And Impact will gladly take them and say, Keith Lee, here's our world title. Be our spokesperson. Well, because you have Keith Lee doing media and he sounds like eloquent and like he's well spoken. He could put your fucking brand over by overnight.
Well, I have I mentioned early on in the other podcast where I said that AEW needs to start cutting the fat. Mike, you know the answer to this, but Rob, I'll ask you this: do you know how many wrestlers are on the AEW roster?
Some crazy number like 105, 110, something like that.
That's sweet. You're lowballing.
You're undershot.
125. Wait. That's
women are like 40.
That's the men. 125.
Yeah. Women are the 40 of them.
Right, and I'm not, and I didn't even count the Ring of Honor wrestlers. So There's a lot of people who need to get out their contracts or need to possibly get a flex going on their contracts because, you know, like you guys mentioned, like a Ricky Starks or a Keith Lee, Miro, you know, guys who can go over there and shake up an Impact and get, you know, some eyes over there, a TNA over there, you know, maybe that could work. But, you know, right now you're looking at a company that's going to transition and go to its old ways. And everybody's like, great. But you still got the same fucking people there. Like, it's like, what are you going to do?
Jay, when the new year hits, we should do a segment where we go down the full roster and cut and keep people.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, that we're going to have to end up doing an episode like that. Also, we also got to start getting ready because our year end, our Turnbuckle Tabloid Awards, our Tabby Awards are going to be coming out soon, and you guys are not going to want to miss that shit. So, yeah, but other than that, I want to thank you guys for chiming in and checking in. Rob, let everybody know where they could get you and what you got going on.
So you'll catch me at the indie shows around the New York City. I try to keep a finger on the pulse, whoever's coming up, whatever's around. On Instagram, at what Robert sees, you know, I'm in between contracts, taking my time. So, you know, when something comes up, trust me, the world will know.
Are you going to ICW on Friday?
Probably not. I forgot stuff. I don't think I will.
Mike, what, of course, where we can find you and we can find us at.
Me personally at @M_Sarantino530, and for our Twitter and Instagram is at Turnbuckle Tab.
Mike, are you going to ICW on Friday?
I want to, but I got work to deal with, so it'd be hard for me to go that night and then go to work the next morning.
I get it. Thankfully, I'm off that night, so I get to go and act like an ass and get drunk.
The usual,
of course. But so, of course, thanks you guys again for your time, Rob. Good looking out. We will do this again, sir, whenever you're available.
Yeah, for sure. It'd be my pleasure.
And guys, don't go anywhere. Stick around. We have much to talk about. Check you guys in a second.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff.